Digital Innovations in Learning, a 3D live video journal in association with SNI, Surgical Neurology International, a 2D internet journal, are pleased to present another in the SNI Digital series, Controversies in Spine Surgery, a three-part lecture series and discussion on the Cauda-Aquina syndrome. The title of this talk is a review of the diagnosis and management of Cauda-Aquina syndrome and related malpractice issues. It's given by Nancy Epstein, who's the professor of clinical neurosurgery at the School of Medicine at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. She's the editor-in-chief of Surgical Neurology International. The talks in this series on lumbar Cauda-Aquina syndrome are part one, anatomy, imaging, clinical presentations, and surgical lessons in diagnosing and treating the lumbar Cauda-Aquina syndrome. Part two is avoiding malpractice issues in lumbar spine surgery. And part three is avoiding malpractice in the treatment of CSF leaks. Lumbar Cauda-Aquina syndrome, part one is on the anatomy, imaging, clinical presentations, and surgical lessons in treating this syndrome. Part three of the lumbar Cauda-Aquina syndrome talk is on avoiding malpractice in the treatment of CSF leaks.
So part three, the failure to diagnose and treat Cauda-Aquina syndromes, negligent CSF leaks and their treatment. And then we're going to go through this and then the best timing of surgery for Cauda-Aquina syndromes. The anatomy of the meninges, probably people are very familiar with this. You have the dura, and then you have the arachnoid, and below the arachnoid, you have the spinal fluid. And then the pia is just on the surface of the nerve tissue itself. Dural tears, everybody will say, especially lumbar spine, Cauda-Aquina syndromes, it just comes with the territory. It's a complication. However, if you've done the wrong operation or you're doing an inadequate exposure or technically poorly performing that operation, then it is negligence and it is not just a complication. It is the technical error of your ways. And here's just an illustration of, you know, identifying the dural tear that may be present. Obviously, doing Valsalva maneuvers will tell you if it's there. If you're just using loops, get out your microscope. If you didn't even put on your loops, get out your loops. But it is best to use a microscope. If that microscope, again, has been in the corner, take it out. If you do not have an assistant helping you in that case, this is a great time to ask for an assistant. It's really difficult to repair these adequately if you don't have an assistant. Running sutures, you do not use a running suture. You do interrupted sutures, even if there are papers out there saying, oh, they're just comparable, where they're not, because if you get one suture loosening, the whole thing is going to fall apart, and that's not going to be the way to repair this. The repair, Gore-Tex sutures. I was using 7-0 Gore-Tex suture. The needle is very, very small. The size of your exposure has to be enough to allow the curve of that needle to get in so that you can actually do the repair. And you can see as you go up the different sizes, how wider and wider the bevels get. This is a non-resorbable suture. And what's great about the suture is that the suture itself is bigger than the needle. So that means every time you go through the dura, you are obliterating that hole with the suture itself. If you're using Neuralign and some of these others, the needle is bigger than the suture and you're going to have constant leak still coming from that. But the Gore-Tex sutures, they're non-resorbable and they have higher risks of resistance to pressure. Neuralines and basically the single sutures, they leak at lower pressures. And again, they start to unfurl. They can't, you don't get as tight a knot with those and they loosen. So that's not the suture to use. The best dural repair is to use your interrupted sutures. If you need it, you can add a muscle graft or actually you can get fascia as well. I would not use cadaver graft any longer. It's got too many problems with it. I would not use fat. Fat is going to shrink up and disappear and resorb. You do a primary 7-0 suture repair, and you then want to do your Valsalvas to make sure it's as watertight as possible. So here's your dural repair with your sutures. Again, you can add a muscle patch graft to that if you need it. You can test the quality of your closure with a Valsalva maneuver. If it's still leaking, you can put in another suture. You can also add what are called microdural staples to facilitate that repair. So here's just an example. This happened to be a tumor case. Here you can see your dural edges above and below, and here's your quadriquinus sitting here. And then in this instance, we've got 7-0 Gore-Tex sutures. We're taking out a neurofibroma in this case, but you've got your retraction sutures. So once you've taken out the tumor, what you can do, each of these sutures, retraction sutures, is on a clamp. So you can flip the clamp one side to the other, one side to the other, to bring the leaves of that dura together. And then what you do is, if these are your dura, this is your dura, you try and evert the dura to then with a Penfield forceps, and you then bring your suture around and through the dural on each side, and you do suture by suture by suture, et cetera, as you go up to repair that. And then in between that, you're going to put your microdural staples. Microdural staples are like 1.4 millimeters. So you then get a Valsalva at this point. You really want to make sure it's as watertight as possible. If it's not watertight, this is when you put in your muscle patch graft. If you put an onlay graft over an open CSF leak, it's going to float away. It's not going to work. It's going to get worse. It's not going to, and you can put in the dirigent you want. You can put in the, as I said, Duracil, which is big and blue and glommy, and it takes about 3 weeks to resorb. But when it resorbs, you're going to have a massive CSF leak underneath this. And so the dirigent,
if you don't have the micro clips, you just put more sutures in, right?
That's right. That's right. Okay. And if it still doesn't work, take a piece of muscle. Muscle is great for occluding the leaks. It doesn't have to be a live muscle graft. We were doing that for a while, where you make it a pedicle graft, and we didn't bother with that anymore. But you really have to keep going. The other thing you can do, you put your, you do this, you do your muscle graft, et cetera, and then you can put in your first layer of fibrin sealant over that. And that's what that is. And by the way, don't leave gel foam behind or FloSeal, because that can actually swell and cause a quadriquinus syndrome. But over that, the microfibrillar collagen, there are two kinds. One is for just onlay application. Okay, that's if there's no leakage. If there's leakage, you put in a little fibrin sealant. You may put in what's called the non-suturable Duragen. And then above that, okay, that's what it looks like when you put it in. It usually deforms to the shape of the dura, et cetera. But don't be fooled. You're going to put another thin layer of fibrin sealant over that microfibrillar collagen or Duragen. But then you're going to want to take suturable Duragen, where you get out your 7-0 Gore-Tex sutures, and you just, on a perimeter around it, you're going to directly repair that leak. And this is what it actually looks like. So here's your suturable Duragen, and I put a final layer of fibrin sealant on the outside. And see all these little sutures here, 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 here. There's some under there as well. This way, it's not going to float away. It's not going to disappear. I can't remember the last time that a sutured Duragen repair failed. So it takes throwing in the kitchen sink. It takes much longer, but this is the way to do it, because as soon as you're coming back again, then, you're really ending up with trouble, much less possibly an infection. Here's a case of negligent, minimally invasive surgery that can lead to an avoidable leak and recurrent post-op leaks because you didn't repair it the first time. You didn't enhance or enlarge your exposure. And it might take a lot of enlarging of your exposure to get it, but it can lead to a quadriquinus syndrome if you have a lot of compression from it. And here, a negligent, minimally invasive discectomy, poorly repaired, recurrent post-op leak. This is your post-op leak, caused a quadriquinus syndrome. and then in this case, led to that patient's continued deficit. Okay. So the best timing of surgery for corticoid syndromes, and you can take away the message, the sooner the better, and then forget everything else. Certainly less than 0 to 1 days, but you don't have those 24 hours, especially if you already have a patient with a significant deficit. The clock starts ticking as soon as that patient gets that deficit. The studies that say you have 48 hours, they're wrong and they're poorly done. The studies that say you have 24 hours, well, they're counting from the time that the patient had the onset of the deficit in general. And a lot of the other studies are saying, less than 6 hours, less than 12 hours, or basically the sooner the better. This was a very good study by Hogan et al. He looked at less than 6, less than 12, less than 24 hours. Nearly 21,000 cases of corticoid syndromes. I mean, this is big data, obviously. Best results, surgery day 0 to 1. From the initial onset, better at less than 6 to less than 12 hours. So don't let your colleagues, don't let your friends, don't let any of your spine surgeons get away with just, oh, well, I had 24 hours, so it's within that 24-hour period. Wrong. You want to do the best for your patient. You want that patient to have the best outcome. Get out of bed, stay out of bed, do the operation that night. Don't wait till the next morning. And this applies to both partial and full corticoid syndromes. Worst outcomes were found at days 2 or greater. And again, this is a huge national inpatient sample database. So 21,000 cases. So these are the big studies. Forget the small studies, the poorly done studies that said you have 48 hours. That's not correct. Kouros's study, corticoid syndrome is a potentially devastating spinal condition. Timely diagnosis and treatment is imperative for outcomes, for avoiding also the medical legal ramifications. Emergent spinal surgery is indicated and urgent decompression and enhances your chance of recovery. I'd written an article, The Sooner the Better, Surgical Neurology International 2022, after writing just a review article. This was really the sort of the perspective. This was again looking at a nation inpatient sample that was over 25,000 cases. It was from one of the other authors. And again, early surgery, the earlier the better. And this is just documenting and reminding surgeons, doctors, patients, everybody, especially the emergency room and your physicians and your hospitalists, there's something called the partial corticoid syndrome, incomplete. You don't have to have everything. And here's the complete corticoid syndrome where you have, the paralysis, the sensory loss, the sidal anesthesia, urine and bladder discontinence, et cetera, incontinence. So the emphasis again on partial versus just complete corticoid syndrome. That is the biggest message to get out there, especially to our adjunctive personnel and friends. Do the right operation. The adequately extensive operation might be your laminectomy or your coronal hemilaminectomy, as I had, shown people before. Adequate exposure decompression. Doing these, the sooner the better. The clock starts ticking as soon as that patient started developing that deficit, not just when they hit your emergency room. It's not at your convenience. Negligent and delayed surgery likely results in the poorest of outcomes. And again, malpractice makes perfect or really imperfect. So the conclusion is that surgery, the earlier the better or the sooner the better, certainly less than 24 hours, 6 and 12 hours. The sooner you can decompress these patients, the worse, the better they're going to be. Choose the right time and the right surgeon and the right operation to get the best results.
Well, it's a excellent job, Nancy. Just a tour de
Well, the
force
sooner the better.
here.
Okay.
Excellent. I think as I was thinking as you were going through all this, it gets down to some basics. I'll just take a couple minutes here, but it takes a history. You mentioned that so many times. You have to take the history. Don't let somebody else do it. Don't hear it from somebody even in the emergency room. You got to go down and get the history. When did you stop urinating the last time? When did your legs start getting weak? They don't know how to ask these questions. When did you
Right.
start get tingling and so forth? When did you notice your foot was dropping and then you were dragging it? Well, a month ago or so. You got to get a very good history, and then you find out I'm on Coumadin or I'm on some blood thinners or I've had heart trouble. I mean, all of these things relate to your outcome. And do an examination. Do an examination. Obviously, you want to do it yourself. Just do an examination. If you have telemedicine, you can have somebody do it. I think you mentioned that you can get some pretty good examination if you're there directing them to do the things. And then you come to your differential diagnosis. What do they got? And if the differential diagnosis contains a threatening disease, you don't wait. I mean, it's like waiting. Well, I could have an aneurysm. I don't know. I'm going to take 2 weeks to figure it out. No, you can't do that. And so you get a differential diagnosis. You got to do imaging. We've talked to you. If you don't have the finest imaging in the world, you can still do basic imaging. We all did this years ago. You can put in some dye. You can do a myelogram, and you can get a very nice image of what's going on. Obviously, if you have a CT and an MR, that's only better and it's quicker. And it's surgery. It's an emergent operation. Everybody in the hospital doesn't want to think about that. Well, we're off. We got to call in a special crew or this, that, and the next thing. There is no reasonable excuse. What you have to decide is what would you want or your family need if they had the same problem? And and the other thing is you're going to have enough exposure. Don't be convinced by representatives and other people I can do this minimally invasive. Not saying that all the minimally invasive is wrong. I'm saying that what Nancy said, you've got to find the right operation for the right circumstance and the right environment. And just because they may report some cases from some country where they've done 10,000 of them through a minimally invasive exposure doesn't mean you can do it. And it doesn't mean you're inadequate if you don't do that. Do the job. Do it right. And complication, admit it immediately and fix it. That's
the message. And if there is a complication, recognize it and do a diagnostic study that can allow you to diagnose what the problem is and then fix it. You know, that's the amazing thing to me is the extent that many surgeons will now go to basically ignore that there's a postoperative deficit or problem, even life-threatening problem, and just
admit it, make your diagnostic studies if that's what it means. Look, we all make mistakes. Fix it. That's what surgeons do. Fix it. And
don't hand everything off to your adjunctive personnel. No. Not everything should be the PA, the nurse practitioner, or whoever else you happen to have in your office. I mean, so many of these patients go back and forth and back and forth postoperatively to the office, never seeing the surgeon. And it's supposed to be transmitted or discussed with the surgeon. And some have no knowledge of it. Some refuse to admit that they had knowledge of it and they don't do anything about it. Let me just show people if they're
your literature.
At this,
yeah, I'm sorry.
Some literature. No, some literature in this. And here's another that they can take a look at. And yet another paper that they can look at. And I think that's.
Now they can.
Screens, this is pretty much
those. That's
right. Right. So, but yeah, I mean, what's very educational. Actually, one of the reasons that we've discussed this before, that I do medical legal work. First of all, patients need to have representation. And there's a great effort out there to make sure that they are not represented by decent surgeons. And they're being hurt and injured. And some surgeons are repeatedly injuring patients. And in some states, they're even being brought up on charges in those states, and their licenses are coming under consideration. But we all have to recognize that if adverse events are observed intraoperatively, postoperatively, the point is not to ignore them, but to treat them and fix them and try and optimize that patient's outcome, because basically this should be all for the patient.
I think I want to, can I add one other thing here? And that's about admitting a mistake. You tell the patient, I made a mistake. Or I had this problem at surgery, and this is what I did, and these are the things I'm looking for. You got to help and see if you can recognize these problems so we know. But you try to hide the information. I've been in cases where the hospital, they go to the lawyers say don't say anything about it. And it just is one more problem after the other. Remember, no matter what they tell you, you're the one who goes to court. It's on your record. They don't pay the price. The patient pays the price. And if you don't do it right, you're going to pay a price. So there's no easy way out of this.
Absolutely.
You agree with that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And they will circle the wagons and then leave you, hang you out to dry. So
We had a
you
patient.
have to.
We had a patient. We took a vascular tumor out of the posterior fossa. It was referred to us because nobody else wanted to do it. We did it. It was very successful. We had an interventricular drain, you know, while they were after surgery, so that they could decompress and so forth. And then we wanted the patient to go down for an imaging study. And the radiologist injected the dye into the ventricular drain. The patient seized and died.
Oh my God. Oh my
I
God.
found out about that. We went and talked to the husband immediately. I called the lawyer for the university and I said, settle this. It's indefensible. Settle it. And it was settled, and the family was understanding. They were very reasonable about it. And the amount of settlement was very reasonable. And so, but nobody tells you that. And they tell you how to cover it up and do all kinds of things that you would never do in your life. You don't do that. You pay the price, the patient pays the price. Don't do that. So, thank you very much, Nancy. Just a spectacular job. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation. The material provided in this program is for informational purposes and is not intended for use as diagnosis or treatment of a health-related problem or as a substitute for consulting a licensed medical professional. At the end of the video, please fill out your evaluation of this program. This recorded session is available free on snidigital.org. If you have questions, comments, or request CME for credit, write to ausman@snidigital.org. There are many ways to learn. Among them, supported by this foundation, is Surgical Neurology International, known as SNI, a 2D internet journal with Nancy Epstein as the editor-in-chief. Its web address is sni.global. The second journal is a 3D live video journal called SNI Digital Innovations in Learning. It's interactive with discussion, and its web address is snidigital.org. Both are free 24/7, 365 to everyone, everywhere. Surgical Neurology International has been published for 14 years and is read in 239 countries and territories. It's the third most widely read 2D journal in neurosurgery. And SNI Digital Innovations in Learning is a new 3D video journal, the only video journal of neurosurgery, and it's now seen in 111 countries in 7 months. The goal of the foundation supporting these programs is to help people throughout the world. The Medical News Network is a network, television network, designed to bring truthful medical and science news to the world. This material is all copyrighted in 2024 by the James I. and Carolyn R. Ausman Educational Foundation. All rights are reserved. Thank you very much for watching this program.